Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm here, your host here again tonight on the Sedona Connection, and it's nice to be back again with the program because we were gone last week. And excuse me here just a minute. I'm looking at my Facebook page and wanting to see where is the live stream coming up, and it is. Oh, yep, there it is. We're on. We're on live stream on Facebook as well, and so we're here on both Facebook, Blog Talk Radio again. Thank you for joining us here tonight. It's the evening of September 12th. It's 6 o'clock here in Sedona. It's 9 o'clock on the East Coast, and we're having another absolutely wonderful day here. I was down in the Phoenix area this morning, and Phoenix is still getting up to 105 and 106 degrees. We were at 92 or 94 here in Sedona today. And yes, it is a dry heat, folks, so it's very tolerable, okay? But we're still having absolutely wonderful weather here. And that's quite the contrast to Blanca. How are you doing on this fine evening? Because your weather is quite contrasting to what I'm experiencing here in Sedona.
That's true. We've got the hurricane coming. Now, that's mostly of concern to the folks at the Georgia coast, but what it does for us, it makes weather very unpredictable. We will probably be getting some of the winds and some of the rain, but yes, and we were just talking about how that plays, you know, havoc with scheduling and all this sort of thing, because sometimes people have, for example, relatives coming in, for example, from North Carolina. So I was telling you, you can't tell your employees, no, you've got to do the project. You know, you got to say, yes, you know, take care of your family that's coming into town or whatever. So it's exciting. It's a nice kind of a breaking up of patterns, actually. We get into our usual routine, and then people realize that things can change at a moment's notice.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we really obviously want to be thinking and praying about for the people in North Carolina, South Carolina, because they're saying this storm, by the time it hits, could end up being the worst hurricane to ever hit our country. And it's interesting how, you know, the eye of the storm is coming in it's projected for just north of that North Carolina, South Carolina border. And then here you are all the way down in Atlanta, and you're still going to get some of it down there. You're not going to have the huge... But you're going to get, you know, the outer bands of the rain and
some of the weather.
The latest I was reading, it says by this time this storm hits land, it may be 500 miles across. It's huge. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're hoping. I mean, we've had these hurricanes because there's so much projection. They can kind of watch it for a while, and sometimes they'll take a turn for the better.
Yeah.
But I think even if it turns, there's going to be severe weather experienced. And so there's a lot of upheaval and people trying to make adjustments. Remember the last time that the big one was headed to Florida, and you know, we got a call from a friend. He's not a real close, you know, friends enough that he picked up the phone and he said, "I'm trying to find a place, you know, for my family, and can we come and stay with you?" And of course, you're going to say yes. You can't
sure.
say no.
Yeah.
It turns out he had his wife, his daughter and son-in-law, a baby, and his wife's parents. And I'm like, boy. And you know, Alan and I live alone, right? And I'm like, holy Toledo, what are we going to do? You know, I was just, you know, how are we going to care for these people? But it turns out that he was able to find something closer, that he didn't have to come all the way to Atlanta and drag, you know, all his family across. But so, you know, it's things like that. So even though you may not necessarily be at North Carolina, people wanting to, you know, come inland are looking for help. And so hopefully the thing won't, you know, come at its worst. Hopefully there'll be some mitigating factors and it won't hit as hard as it could. That's all we can hope for. And then, you know, put our thoughts with all our, you know, brothers and sisters and fellows over there in North Carolina. I mean, I love North Carolina. I don't know if you've been there. It's such a beautiful state. And Al and I like to go up there to the mountains. It's just beautiful. Of course, they're going to get hit at the coast, and the coast is beautiful too. So there's a little bit of a pang here because we know how beautiful that state is and the people as well. So, you know, hopefully it'll go well for all and they'll be safe.
Well, I know last year, you know, when the hurricane hit Florida, that was the weekend we were scheduled to have a workshop in Orlando. You know, we had to cancel the whole workshop.
That's right.
And I rescheduled that as quickly as possible. But yeah, we had a lot of people in Orlando just picked up and left, you know, and then
right. They
would either message or an email saying, sorry, I can't make it. But I was able to cancel about 3 or 4 days in advance. In fact, what it came down to is my whole flight was canceled. I mean, you know,
yeah.
My flight from Phoenix to Orlando, I mean, they shut that down as well. So I wouldn't even have been able to have gotten there. So, but that was last year at that time. So, but here we are again. But on that note, we had a wonderful, wonderful workshop in Sedona over the weekend. And
yes.
I do have a couple of them coming up here. I've got Amsterdam, week from Saturday. And so obviously I don't expect folks to be going there, but still I had promised the folks there that I would come back. And so I am. I'm going back there. And then after that, we've got Oakland on October 13th. And I'm going back to Orlando on October the 27th. It's 2 weeks after that. I think it's the 24th, 27th or whatever, but it's on my website. And then November the 27th. That's right. I wrote this down. I'm trying to think, I couldn't even read my own writing. So yeah, October 13th, Oakland, October 27th in Orlando, November 17th in Seattle. And then I've added one more December 1st for the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and there was a special reason why I needed to do that. And then the others they'll be waiting until January of next year. But that's the schedule for the rest of this year. And, folks, what's really exciting is I'm adding new material and information. And the people that were at Sedona, I mean, I've had some people, like this was their 10th or 11th one, and they just said this was absolutely by far the best thing that they had ever heard. It just continued to get better because I integrated the whole purpose and the reasoning behind what I had talked about 2 weeks ago about this new world that's coming our way and moving into this new world and what's available for us. And I talked about, you know, the learn process and everything else and about how that works and how it all ties in. And we begin to see the bigger picture of everything that's taking place. And so that's a little bit what I'm going to talk about tonight. But before we get into that, let's see there, Blanca, is there anything else that you would like to share with us?
No, I don't think so. It's you're going to be busy for the rest of the year with workshops. So hopefully people will, you know, be able to take advantage of that. And I know Al and I are already looking at our schedule to see if we can join you in Orlando. So that would be very good. And you know, I encourage folks to see if they can make the time to attend. And again, to not forget that you offer scholarship programs.
Yep.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's wonderful because I've helped you check in folks and, you know, the folks who have the budget to pay, they'll pay the full amount.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the vast majority of them. And then those who need assistance and go to scholarship, they'll do their scholarship. So it's a beautiful thing to see how that works out. I really enjoy that aspect of it. And everybody is appreciative, whether they pay the full amount or get the scholarship, they're appreciative to be able to attend. So I just wanted to remind folks.
Sure.
But that's an option if it makes a difference.
I usually get roughly about one third of the people are on scholarships. And I don't have any problem
mm-hmm.
with that. I always say, I want you to be there if you want to be
right.
there. And as long as we're not sold out and there's room, you're welcome to come, you know, on the scholarship rates. And if you're extremely tight, there's some real problems with you, let me know. And I'm always willing to work with you on that. If there's room in the room, you're always more than welcome to come. That's the issue. But I still have to cover my expenses. And also, this is how, you know, I don't sell anything on my blog sites. I don't sell any books or tapes or, you know, I don't ask, you know, for any, you know, money for the trips. So this is where this is the only money that I have come in. And it's an option. I let people do that. You know, the radio programs are free, the newsletters are free. If you got questions, you can send me emails with your questions, and I'm always willing to respond to that. But I always, when you're there in a full day, you always are able to go into much more depth and put it all together so they see the big picture about what's really going on here. And we begin to see it's not just about the money, it's about so much more than that. And so that's why I always encourage people to be able to come. And What I usually do is that I always schedule them about 2 to 3 weeks apart. On average, they're about 3 weeks apart is what they are. But every once in a while, I'll do a couple of weeks. Like there's 2 weeks in between Oakland and Orlando, and then there's 3 weeks in between Orlando and Seattle, and then 2 weeks before I go back to Dallas. And then I'm not doing anything else in December. But, you know, it's holiday season, so that's why. Other than that, all is well, and I'm looking forward to doing that, and it's going to be a wonderful trip next week. I'm not certain if I'm going to be able to do a program next week. I'll try, but I fly out very early on Thursday morning to go to Amsterdam, and that usually means that I will have to go down to Phoenix and spend the night there before. Otherwise, I'm leaving my house at around 4 a.m. and to catch the flight, and I'd rather spend the night down at the hotel and catch the flight at a reasonable time, you know, instead of having to spend all that time driving down that early in the morning. So, but we'll see. We'll see how things develop and how things go. But it is a little bit of a slow season right now. We're in a situation, there is no new news. Nothing is new on the currency exchange issue. It's just that, you know, it's all again about security. I have nothing else to add to that. They're waiting on it because there's stuff that's going on behind the scenes on a political basis internationally. And what we've come down to, we're being told there's only a handful of people that know really what's going on, and they're just not talking. Unless you are in a need to know, they aren't talking to anybody. And I am not in a need to know, and there's even people above me that are not in a need to know. It's only those at the very, very high, very that are in the process of rolling stuff out. They're the only ones that don't want to talk about it because they don't want any false news leaking out that creates some more problems for them, because as soon as the news leaks out that there's a counter move, because it's kind of like a chess game by basically the opposition and the cabal, they end up countering moves if they hear anything. So it basically says that no news is good news is the best way to say that. But it's progressing well. That's all that I can say on that. But here we're beginning to move into seeing the bigger picture of all the stuff that's going on here. So with that, anything else you'd like to finish or anything you'd like to share, Blanca, before we go into the program tonight?
No, I think we're good to get started. Yes.
Okay. And just remember, folks, all the dates for the workshops, they're there on my website, and they're also in the newsletter. So now, 2 weeks ago, I was talking about the program is that we're moving into this new world. We're going through a shift and change. And humanity, as you study history, we always go through what is called a shift and a change of an age. Now, and they kind of follow cycles about what they do. Well, the major shifts are about roughly every 26,000 years. And it lines up with the lunar cycles is what it does. And we went through that major shift back in December, you know, again in 2012, where we went through this huge shift in the lunar cycles that were there. With that, usually comes a shift in change of the energy of our solar system and our planet. And when that energy shifts and change, there's also a shift and change in the human consciousness. Now, this doesn't just boom happen overnight. It's something that progresses over a couple hundred years is what it does. And as we progressively move into this new shift, then we plateau. And we'll stay there for a while, which means we have to work through that season of shift and adjustment for our what is called our whole human awareness and our human consciousness and the elevation of human consciousness. And that's the shift and change that we're going through. And what's happening here now is we're starting to get a better understanding of who we truly are as human beings and what our world is really like. We have been taught for hundreds of years that we live in a universe, in a world that's kind of like based on Newtonian science. Now, when I was back, a child in school, the science and the physics where we were taught were Newtonian physics. Newtonian physics means everything was solid, everything was matter, everything was established, everything was set in place, including your DNA, and that didn't shift and it didn't change. What is what is, and that's just the way it is. That's Newtonian science. And then quantum physics comes along and blows Newtonian science out of the air, because quantum physics, down to the level of energy that is below the level of the atoms and the molecules, and down to that very what is called the quantum level. And at the quantum level, they understand everything is energy. And everything is based upon the energy and the frequency and the vibration of everything that is around us. And because everything is energy, and because energy can change, it means everything around us has the ability to change. Everything has that basis to create change. But what happens is we get stuck in a belief system. And that belief system is ingrained all the way down into our unconscious mind. And it's from there that is where the things that we believe, the things that we do, how we react, how we think. And that then predicates the experiences that we have. So we have been programmed to believe that life is like Newtonian science, but it's not. And so we're going to start learning and understanding that life is not about Newtonian science. Life is about quantum science. It's about quantum. And what we call this, what I call it, is the holonomic quantum world. And when we start thinking and program ourselves at the unconscious level of a holonomic quantum world, we get to start living that way. And living that way means there's no limitations on the things that you can do. Now, I talked about last week, there were a group of scientists headed up by this gentleman called, by the name of A.R. Borden. They got it. They understood that, and they knew that. And Borden had made a comment a number of years ago, and he had said that everything that you saw in Star Trek, on the TV show Star Trek 30 years ago, we do it all for real. We can time travel for real because we understand in the holonomic quantum world, there is no such thing as time. Time is not linear. Time is vertical. We understand that. And so we can time travel. Yes, we can do the real beam me up, Scotty. We can teleport our bodies to basically anywhere on this planet because we understand that the body is not physical. It's comprised of energy that has a physical look to it. So they could time travel. They could do the beam me up, Scotty. They were the best remote viewers in the world. And they had something else that they understood. And it's called the MPO. And I've talked about LERM, but really they use the term MPO more often. Manifest Production Observership. They understood because that everything in the world is energy, and energy is flexible, and energy can shift and change. That as observers, we as the human observers, it was the energy that came out of our thoughts and our bodies produced manifestation. And it was a couple months ago, I talked about the world being what is called, you know, the holonomic universe. Now, again, I want to show you the book because you're really going to want to read this if you want to grasp this information. The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot. In the beginning, here it is again, The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot. In the beginning of the book, he talks about Dr. Bohm. He's the scientist, the physicist that had developed the understanding that the world was holographic. And Bohm and Stein, they had this debate that went on for a good 20 to 30 years that, you know, where Einstein says, no, the world is made of matter, the world is made of particles. And Bohm would say, no, that it's not. It's holographic, and it's only a holographic image that is there. And Einstein would come back, and he says, well, this. And then that's when Bohm would come back, and he would say, well, what about these miracles that we see all around us all the time? They expand and go beyond the world being particle-based. And he says, he basically was challenging Einstein. He says, you're still thinking in a Newtonian-based world that is not there, and you know that. And finally, at the end of his life, at about the last year in his life, Einstein finally came around and basically agreed with Bohm. He understood that the world was holographic. The world is not real. It is not solid. It's our physical senses that gives us the perception that it is. And because we've programmed our thinking and our processing from the unconscious level to believe that, then we live a world that way. We're now going to start moving into where the masses, and when I say the masses, there's going to be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people that are going to start understanding this. Some of them already do. and even millions, and we're going to start shifting how we think and change and moving into a holonomic quantum-based thinking process of consciousness of how we live. And when we do that, everything begins to shift and change. Now, manifest production observership. It's all what Borden was saying is we already do it. He says there are the three levels of the mind, and I use this as an illustration because it's created. He says first you have your conscious mind, your subconscious mind, and then your unconscious mind. And the best way to describe that is comparing it to a computer system. The conscious mind is like your monitor. See, I've got this big monitor right here in front of me. The monitor is what I am observing at the moment. I've got this monitor right in front of me. It has two programs that is going. It has my video program that is going. I've got my Facebook program that's over there, and another. I have another monitor over here. And that's where I have my Blog Talk Radio studio up. So, but I have a limited amount of information available for me right now. And that's kind of like your conscious mind. Your conscious mind only deals with what comes up in front of you right at the moment. Then when you get down to the subconscious mind, to compare it to a computer system, it's like having a 1 terabyte hard drive on your computer. This massive, massive, massive amount of information that you can bring up to the monitor anytime you want to with just the click of a mouse. And so there's a lot of information that's available that is there. It's accessible for you in a very quick, very rapid fashion, but you only bring a limited amount of it up at the time. So your conscious mind is like your monitor. Your subconscious mind is like the hard drive on your computer. And what he says in the subconscious mind, that predominantly stores all the memories based around what is called your family basis, your family history, i.e. all of the DNA that is from the families that you have come from in every lifetime that you have ever lived. That's where all of that is stored. Because we're programmed to not think about that much about past lives, we don't get some of that stuff coming up. But what we do is we get emotions and feelings and sensations that come up. Our behaviors, our personalities, our talents and our skills are all combinations of what has come from our past lives that's operating at the subconscious level. And then you go into the unconscious. And what Borden says, the unconscious mind operates at the quantum level beyond time and space. And because of that, the unconscious mind is always in touch and in communication with everything that is going on in this complete universe. And the best way to describe it is that the unconscious mind is kind of like the World Wide Web. With just the when you are connected to the internet, with just the click of a mouse, you can bring up information from this whole complete world that we live in and the billions, if not over a trillion different web pages that are out there that are available. It basically means we have unlimited information that is available to us on a conscious level. And that's what the World Wide Web is like. So you have your conscious mind is like your monitor. Your subconscious mind is like your hard drive, and then the unconscious mind is like the World Wide Web. And he said, when we begin to think that way, we begin to allow that stuff to come up. Now, he says, the conscious mind only processes about 18 to 20 databits of information per second. The unconscious mind is processing 60 to 80 million databits of information per second. In the unconscious mind, it's unfathomable what it's processing. It's because it's what it is. It's in touch energetically. Everything that goes around on it, everything that's going on in this universe, it's always there. It's always in connection, and it's always available. But what we have is we have this programming that we don't know how to bring this stuff up. But what's happening is at the unconscious level, we are always processing manifest production observership. By the observation and observing things and how the conscious mind is in touch with the unconscious world, we are producing and manifesting everything that goes on around us. This is in the new science that's available to us. It's all based on hard science. This isn't just a bunch of woo-woo thinking. It's not a bunch of you know, etherical thinking. This is all based on just hard science that is now telling us this is how our world works and how the universe works. And what Borden's people had learned how to do, they had learned how to take the MPO process, the manifest production observership process, and bring it up to the conscious level where they could basically make anything appear instantly. Now, there's a process to do that, and there's steps that you need to go through, and there's things that you have to clear out to do all of that. That's the new world that we're going to be moving into. What I'm going to do tonight, I'm going to share some papers, some essay papers, and then also some books that would be good for you to read. Now, the essay papers I'm not sending out right away, but I'm going to encourage you to read these books. Because what Borden had also done, he had written a white paper, an essay paper, on what's called The Way of Learning. And here it is. Here's my copy of it right here. It's called The Way of Learning. And it's about, you know, a 45-page paper, essay paper is what it is. In that paper, he discusses we learn by collecting data and information and then processing that and then basically organizing it around about how we think and what we believe. That's the learning process. And he says when you want to learn something, the more background information you can get, the more fundamental information you can get, the more base information that you can get, it adds to the ability to process the learning at your conscious level. So if we want to learn how to do MPO, the more of the foundational material that we read that gives the foundation of who Borden was and how his group operated, then the easier that process will be for you. So that's why I share these books. Now let me share again. I said this one, Ground Book, that is essential. Okay? I've shared with you always, many times, this book, Disappearance of the Universe by Gary Renard, is a background book that is essential. There's another one called Ancient Arrow Project, and it's on the wingmakers.com website. You can download the book in PDF form, or you can order the physical book from Amazon.com or whoever. It's called Ancient Arrow Project, and it's the story of Borden's group, of how, who they were, how they operated, and how they came to discover all of this process and this stuff that was available for us, and how the Wingmakers material works in conjunction with them. So again, those three books are essential. Ancient Arrow Project, you can get it off the website, the wingmakers.com website, and the other two that I've shown you, Disappearance of the Universe and the Holographic Universe. And then also, and I've said this many, many, many times, you're going to want to read the Neruda interview, specifically the fifth interview by Dr. Neruda. Because all of that, when you read those and read them multiple times, they become foundational in everything that builds up to this MPO process. Now, it's interesting because as I've read through, and here again is the essay paper, and it's called right there, it's Manifest Production Observership, Part 1 and Part 2. It's in, you know, the what he has in here. And I've read through most of this. And when I was reading through the first part, kind of like stunned. I don't know if that's the appropriate word to use, but it's like I couldn't believe that everything that I had been doing, the themes of Disappearance of the Universe, the themes that comes out of the Wingmakers materials, the themes that comes out of A Course in Miracles, the themes that were coming out of the Holographic Universe, all of that, he basically was saying, you, as if you understand that, then your MPO process is much easier. Because here's why. in the Manifest Production Observership, and what do they call LERM, Light Encoded Reality Matrix, to be able to make something just appear to you physically in a very quick process and fashion. What you're doing is you're taking the energy production of what they call the biomind, your mind and your body, your biological body and your mind. Those two combined are producing this very powerful energy field. Now, he says, there are people that can see what are called our auras. And what the aura is, they call it the Meissnick energy field. Well, what happens is this Meissnick energy field gets activated. And it's activated, again, by what? The brain that's in your heart, called the enteric brain. And that's why I talked about all this heart consciousness, being able to learn to think from here versus here. There's a very, very powerful energy brain within the heart. And when you activate that, it produces this very powerful Meissnick energy field. And you take an object, you focus on it, you develop a mental template of it. And then when you see it in all of its details that are there, you then begin to focus on that item appearing in a specific spot right in front of you. And it's the energy that's coming out of your mind, and it's the energy that is coming out of your body, light packets that are out there around you, and it's encoding them with this template. And when that happens, boom, the item appears. Borden has been very clear, and so was Neruda in his interview. Anybody can learn to do this if they are willing to be patient and do the work and remove all the blocks that keep it from happening. In the part two of the paper, he describes about how he and some of his colleagues, and if I remember right, there was about six or seven of them, they went and they visited these Tibetan monks in basically Tibet. There was monks that were there in Tibet, and these were monks that were the masters, you know, of meditation and things like that, and they knew how to do this. So they're sitting there with these monks, and all of a sudden there was a couple of them that, boom, they just made their food, the meal of the day, show up right in front of them, out of nothing, out of thin air. And Borden says he turns to his colleagues, and he looks at them, and they kind of smile, and they said, yep, let's do this. And then all of a sudden, all seven of them, boom, their meal shows up right in front of them as well. And these monks were stunned. They were basically saying, you can do this too? We didn't know hardly anybody else who could do this. And that created an open dialogue that they had with them, where they were able to tell them, we are the scientists who have studied this. We understand what is called, you know, the power of being the observership, of the human observership, and how it produces and manifests things of everything around us and what it does, and we understand this process. And he says, we know how to do this, and we've written a white paper of how people can learn how to do this, but they've been very, very careful and cautious about this not getting out too fast. Now, what I want to do here, we're going to shift over, and we're going to watch about a two-minute video. Now, part of this you've seen before. And it's about, again, you know, the very infamous double slit experiment. But this one's a little bit different, with a little bit of different information in it. And it's about 2 minutes long. So let's see. It should be coming up here.
So what they did an experiment called the double slit experiment, where they put two little tiny microscopic slits, and they put photons on the back. And they shot these photons through these slits. But when they weren't looking, the photon created a wave pattern on the back wall of this experiment. So they said, why? How can this be? How can individual photons create a wave pattern? So they went back and put a looking device, a camera, to see how the photons were going through these slits to create a wave pattern. They wanted to know how that could be. But when they did that, when they looked, it created a digital pattern on the back wall. So all of a sudden, it was a wow moment. The actual prospect of looking, in other words, conscious intervention, can change matter, can change the shape of the universe.
Now you can see a video game that's photorealistic, almost photorealistic, and millions of people playing simultaneously, and you see where things are going with virtual reality. If you extrapolate that out into the future with any rate of progress at all, then eventually those games will be indistinguishable from reality. They'll be so realistic, you will not be able to tell the difference between that game and the reality as we know it. Well, how do we know that that didn't happen in the past?
We are here at this plane, at this level of existence, to learn the lessons of duality, to make choices between good and evil.
The reality of the universe itself appears to be holographic in nature.
The consciousness system didn't just put all its eggs in this one basket. There's other virtual realities, and they're all different. They have different rules. They're not all the same rule set.
You will find out something. You will find out that you are more than your physical body.
It's interesting, and I've talked about this in the past, is because the world is holographic, we are more than our physical body. And as we are beginning to understand this, and as our computer science continues to expand, we're going to find that there are going to be virtual reality programs where we can't even tell the difference between what is real and what the program is. That's the world that we're moving into. But there's another, and that is what is called the holonomic process. And that's what, you know, Borden and Neruda, what they talk about. Now, there's one other thing that was extremely important that Borden described. To understand the MPO process on a learn basis, where you can do this on a very short notice, there was one absolute necessary requirement. Your whole biomind needs to be at peace. In essence, you can't have internal conflict going on within you, within your thought system, and within your body. And when you learn how to go within, be in touch with your feelings and your emotions, it becomes very, you get in touch with that part of yourself. You get in touch with the part of yourself where you can tell if there's internal conflict going on. Because he says, when you have internal conflict going on within your biomind, i.e. you're not at peace, or i.e. you're fighting and arguing and debating with what's going on around in the world, you're debating and arguing with President Trump or President Obama, whoever it may be, in your mind, all of that lowers the energy vibration of your biomind. And what it means is your Meissnick energy field lowers as well. To keep the Meissnick energy field at a high, powerful, vibratory state, you need to be at peace and not have any conflict going on within yourself mentally. That's what's important about this book, Disappearance of the Universe, because it talks about this as you get into the state of undoing the ego consciousness, and that's where the conflict comes from. When you undo this ego consciousness, you move into the state of peace. And they talk about in there that it's the forgiveness process that brings you into that state of peace. And it's the forgiveness process that takes you into what is called this enlightenment state. And when you do that, what we think is a physical world begins to disappear, because we realize it's not real. This book talks about how the world is not real. The world around us is not a physical world. It's basically a holographic illusion is what it is. Dr. Neruda, in his 5 interviews, he says, the world is a holographic illusion. It's an illusion that is designed to keep us in a lower state of consciousness, in a lower state of being. It's designed to keep us in the Newtonian state versus the holonomic quantum state in our consciousness is what it is. And so when we move into that, we move into expanding ourselves. James Mahu is the originator and the primary writer in the Wings Maker's material. And he talks about something, and I mentioned this last week, that was really interesting. He says, the human race, for most of our existence, has lived in what is called not just separation consciousness, he says survival consciousness. Life was always about surviving. Imagine what life was like up until 100 to 150 years ago. Life was about making sure you had enough food just to survive for the day. Life was about making sure that you had enough resources to keep yourself going so you would survive. Life was about making sure that you had enough money so that you could put up a defensive system. Life was about having a context in a community or a sense of a tribe or even a country so you could defend yourself from attack from others so that you would survive. Everything we did evolved around survival consciousness. And what James Mahu is saying, we are now moving into a new age where life isn't about survival consciousness anymore. We don't even think about that. We're going to move into an age where life is about expansion consciousness. We get to learn how to expand. We get to learn how to move into this new world. We get to learn how to move into MPO learn process. We get to learn how that life is more than just this physical body. It's more than the Newtonian universe that's around us. Life is about a holonomic, quantum-based world, and that we have unlimited potential in what we could do. In the papers that you read from Borden, he basically said, we learned how to do what were basically the miracles of Jesus. We learned in this process. We understood about how he could do what he could do and how he could create these miracles, how he could walk on water, how he could turn, you know, water into wine, how he could take five little loaves and fishes and multiply it to feed 5,000 people. Because he clearly knew and understood that the world was not limited by its physical world. And you'll learn that in Gary Renard's books and in A Course in Miracles, where those are the teachings, the real true teachings of Jesus. And he understood he had developed his life to live what is called, if from a pure state, what is called pure non-dualism. He undid his ego consciousness and lived in a non-dualistic consciousness, which means there was no inner conflict going on in his life. He was always in the state of nothing but just pure love for people. He always saw people from the place of love. And when you are there, he was always in this very high vibratory energy state that he could do anything. And what Borden is saying, we now get to learn how to do that. But to do that, you have to have the basic foundation issues of your life there. You have to be in a state of peace, i.e. no internal conflict. i.e. meaning you're choosing to undo the ego consciousness, i.e. you're undoing the separation consciousness. You're moving into a pure non-dualistic state of consciousness. You're seeing the world from the eyes of love. And when you do that, you move into what is called this holonomic quantum state of being. It's interesting, this term holographic, holonomic, hologrammatic, the terms that is used in that book, The Holographic Universe, the terms that are used by Borden, the terms that are used by Dr. Neruda, the terms that are even used in Gary Renard's book, because holonomic, holographic, comes from the base word holy. Yes, the spiritual word holy, Holy Spirit, holiness, holy living. The word holy in its original language in the New Testament in the Greek, it comes from the word that means wholeness, completeness, oneness. Everything is whole. Everything is complete, is one. So you have a spiritual state that's a Holy Spirit state. You have a physical state that is a holonomic. You are in a sense of wholeness. You have a consciousness that is a holographic consciousness basis. You have a holonomic consciousness. You are living your life from the place of wholeness is what you're doing. And when we do that and we learn how to deal that way and we just let go of all of the basically the things that come at us that would want to take us down in our consciousness, we learn how to rise above that. One of the things that we deal with that really tries and tests all of us is when we're out there driving around in our car and all these other crazy drivers that are out there. Well, today, this morning, I was down in the South Phoenix area and I'm driving back. And, you know, and it's about a 130-mile drive for me from South Phoenix to my home here in Sedona. And I'm driving down the freeway. And when you're driving down the freeway for a couple hours, you get all these people that are passing you and changing lanes and moving in front of you. And they're driving slow in the left lane and holding up all the traffic behind you. And so it's amazing all of the thoughts that go through your mind just driving down the freeway for 2 hours when you're by yourself. You don't have any music going. You don't have anything else going on in the background. You're just driving and that's it. And so all the stuff comes up in front of you. And we've all been there. We start judging these other drivers. We start criticizing these other drivers who do stupid things. They get in our way. They impede our ability to how we want to move. Or they won't let us change lanes and get in when we want to get in. And they're not being courteous and kind to us because they're living in their own world as they're driving down the freeway. And they got all kinds of thoughts going through their mind just as well. But the issue is we do this almost unconsciously, but we step in to start judging them. You want to move yourself into an internal conflict position, start judging people, judging them. Because as soon as you start judging, you're separating. As soon as you start judging, you're moving yourself into lower vibrational aspects. Judgment, hatred, apprehension, anxiety, all those are low vibratory thought processes that will basically create serious conflicts to your being able to carry out this learned process. Can you imagine what your life would be like if you could do this? There would be no need for any money. You wouldn't need any money. A lot of us have heard about there are these machines out there called these replicators. They can take anything that you have and they can replicate it. Borden talked about that in his paper. He basically said the person who developed these replicating machines was basically doing the same thing with laser light that we can do from our minds and our thoughts. He took a machine and developed its capability to do what the human mind thought process can do. So, folks, it's out there. It's out there. And this is the new world that we have the ability to move into. This is the new world that we have the ability to create for ourselves. And here's what's interesting, and here's what Borden alludes to. You can still learn to do this MPO learn process and still be a person who comes from a place of selfishness and greed. But you need to know whatever you have produced, if the energy behind it is still somewhat of selfishness and greed, then that's the energy that is emanating around you in a holographic means as you are working with that item. You usually produce something, you're going to produce something that you want. Something you're going to keep in your possession, something you're going to use. If you produced it in a lower energy judgmental state, then it's going to produce low energy. If you produced it from an energetic state of love, peace, and forgiveness, and understanding and caring, very high vibratory state, then whatever you produced will produce that energy for you. You see, the energy you put out, we reap what we sow. What do you want to put out? And that's why I share with you, it's so important to understand the fundamental background stuff so that you know how to undo the ego consciousness. You know how to undo your separation consciousness. You know how to work this forgiveness process so you can take yourself into a higher sense of consciousness and a higher sense of awareness where you're coming from that place of the powerful energy of love. Because when we do that, then that's how we really, truly change our world because we are basically doing the MPO. We are manifest production observership in creating the world around us is what we're doing. Now, we all make mistakes. We all still have old stuff to undo. And there's going to be some times you're going to do some pretty dumb and stupid stuff. And that's why when you read Gary Renard's book, you learn how to forgive yourself. You learn to understand the power that is behind forgiveness consciousness. and what it does, because it releases, it heals, it sets free, it undoes all the old stuff is what it does. And that's what's so important in this whole process. So I'm trying to wonder how much more of this do I need to do tonight, because I think I want to just keep this in a simple process that's right there. And we're kind of maybe going to leave it there so that I don't go into, because there's more I can share. And I do go into much more depth in the workshops. But when you see here, I want to again kind of give a bigger recap. This money coming forward isn't just about getting money. Because for most of us, if money is coming from a survival consciousness basis, then this money is going to come from a lower energy consciousness basis, and it's going to produce lower energy consciousness stuff in our lives, is what it's going to do. When the money coupled with, it's integrated with this higher sense of loving, vibrating consciousness, then it begins to produce that. The money is just a tool. The LERM-MPO process is just a tool to help us in our evolutionary process of moving into what is becoming enlightened, you know, holonomic quantum-based beings. That's what the real goal of all of this is. And the money is about setting us free from a form of financial slavery that's been imposed upon us for hundreds and thousands of years. Okay, I think that's it. That's pretty much everything I wanted to share tonight. And Blanca, why don't you come back and join us and share with us some of your thoughts?
Well, I think you should do a T-shirt.
A T-shirt? What's that? Been there, done that?
Yeah. MPO and LERM.
Oh.
Or bust.
To keep this and sell them at the workshop so I can make some extra bucks, huh?
I think so.
You can go out and make your own t-shirts. I don't need to do that.
Uh-huh. I buy one.
That's just more product I have to carry around with me that I have to pay for.
Oh, that's
so,
right.
That's the way I look at it.
That's right.
I mean,
okay.
Boxes that I got to pay for to ship them and have them there. You know, it's just more work.
No, more work is not a good direction to go.
If you want an MPO t-shirt, you can go make your own.
Okay. All right. Everybody heard it. I have witnesses. I've been given the okay.
You can go make your own.
When I make my first 100 bucks off a t-shirt, okay?
That's right.
I'll say I told you so.
Yeah. Some people say, well, what's that? You know, then it opens up the door to open up, you know, kind of a conversation is what it does. It's like, well, what's MPO LERM? What does that mean?
I'll put
all
one
right.
On Alan. They'll get a mouthful then. And he's real good like you. He can really talk about things from all kinds of angles. And, you know, if it's something they're interested in, that's great. If it's not, they're like, hey, let me out of here.
Yes, I know.
But,
yeah.
Right.
In fact, they'll think you're crazy and they don't want to be around you. Well, you're living in a world I don't live in. And you can say, yes, that's true. I am.
Oh, you know, it's an amazing thing to behold. For us, this is a very dynamic, interesting topic. Like you, I recognize that this is the next step. In other shows, you've talked about AI, and this is kind of an artificial intelligence and artificial enhancement, but really what you're talking about is the organic abilities that we have as human biominds, right? So we are stepping up, we can call it a soft technology effort. So you could see why the controllers are going to want to do their version of it. So in a way, in my point of view, I think people who are interested in these sort of topics and are doing the work that you've been talking about, heart consciousness and the forgiveness process, et cetera, that it might be an interesting thing for us to think of ourselves like pioneers, right? Like you say, we're way showers. And if we're given the grace or the gift or the whatever to actually pursue these topics and pursue these practices and even be able to hone them and wield these, we can be a very force for good for all of humanity.
I was looking for this book that I didn't have it right on the couch behind me, and I thought it would be there. And it was a book I had just finished reading about, you know, about a week and a half ago. And, you know, Dan Brown, who wrote The Da Vinci Code, which is such a great book.
Yes.
Sold like 80 million copies or something like that. He just came out with a new book about a year ago called Origin. And what's really interesting, it's a great book. It's one of those page turners and all the drama that you
know,
Dan Brown.
Oh, yes,
he's
good.
But he describes the upcoming artificial intelligence world. There's this one robot being that he's talking with, and his name is Winston, and the guy just sounds like an absolute human being. You wouldn't even hardly even think that this could be just a robot. And then at the end of the book, he talks about gives a description where you can visualize this upcoming artificial intelligence world. And when you come back to Neruda's material, he says, this is what's coming our way. And so if you want to get a picture to look at what's coming our way with this upcoming artificial intelligence world, you get a picture of it in Dan Brown's latest book, Origin. And that book's only been out for about a year. And remember that when we develop this heart consciousness process, we're the contrast to that. And the whole issue is, see, what we call these cabal controllers, it's always been about power and control over the human race and keeping the humans in forms of slavery. And as we're moving into our new world, their means of the new paradigm of power and control over humanity is the artificial intelligence world, the transhumanist agenda. And this heart consciousness, developing this enteric heart and being able to develop this whole MPO learning process is the contrast to that. Because, see, there we're learning how to come from the soul. And what the artificial intelligence world does, it blocks the consciousness of the soul. So we're not living from a place of soulness. We're living from a place of basically technology with a physical body that is not real. And so it shuts down and it blocks the whole, what I call the deeper heart consciousness soul process for our lives. That's what the AI world does. And that doesn't mean you can't have forms of AI that you're using in your life, but what you want to make sure is that it's not shutting down your heart consciousness process. And this stuff that I talk about is the alternative to that. And you really get that picture in reading the Neruda interviews. About, you know, the two forms of humanity that we're moving into in this new world. So.
Yes, I think he does a very good job of that. And I think the books that you suggested are all good because, yes, they're very informative and they'll take the technical side of the information, but they're very readable. I mean, the books by Neruda and the Neruda interview, very readable, and I found very interesting. And the same thing with the holographic universe. I mean, there's some things. What I found very interesting of that book is the actual experiences or actual experiments that are done that are like you wouldn't believe it unless it was someone who is writing about it in a scientific way. And that was very readable book as well. So it's not like these are, you know, huge scientific tomes. you can get what they're talking about, you know, by reading these. Another one that I think is pretty good is one called "Do You Quantum Think?" by Diane Collins, and that's another very readable book. She will go through the different principles of quantum science, but she'll do it from a very practical level and how by changing your thinking and things like, you know, observer created relationship and observer created reality, and unlimited potential. And, you know, these different things, the principles that quantum science talks about, and she will step them down to what does that mean in everyday life and how can you shift your thinking, right, from the, you know, Euclidean model, and she even offers exercises and all that. And I found that very interesting and very readable as well. So there's various things that are available that are already talking about this in a very real, practical way.
That's great. Yeah, and so if anybody else, you know, come across any other books that are similar to that, I'm always open to it.
Mm-hmm.
I always look for books that basically they talk about we live in a world of i.e. ego or separation consciousness, and then how
mm-hmm.
do you because see that's the entrapment process. Ego separation consciousness is what traps us into and keeps us into this what I call this Newtonian world, and it blocks us from being able to understand who we truly are and what our true capability is. And so that's what most of all my reading now is I'm looking, is it describing something of that nature? Other than that, I don't want to waste my time with it because
right.
I'd refer to it, it's nothing but then just entertainment. And that's not that it doesn't mean that you can't read stuff to entertain yourself. You know, I read, you know, Dan Brown's new book Origin to entertain myself. But I was just amazed at the theme that was in there and how it helped me understand stuff that I already know. And, you know, entertainment is fine, but at the end of the day, is it entertainment or is it helping me in my consciousness progression? And to do that, you're undoing the separation consciousness. You're healing that process is what you're doing. So.
Well,
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was saying with so much information available, just like we pick what we eat and we pick what we wear, I agree with you. I think we should pick what we pay because we're paying attention to. And I think, too, as indeed the opportunity to evolve in consciousness and to expand our abilities, it even behooves us more to say, well, how am I using my consciousness? You know, I'm not saying this to be judgmental, but do I just sit and veg in front of the TV for 2 or 3 hours? Now, is that really the best way for us to pay attention? I don't know. Now, some people will say that some shows are inspiring to them. And that's sure. good. If there's something that you are extracting from that for your betterment and the betterment of your brothers, I guess it's okay. But I'm along with you. It's just like we pay attention to what we eat. I think we should pay attention to what we consume in terms of information.
And most people don't. They allow the world to dictate to them, and they look at, does this make me feel good at the moment? That's the bottom line.
Right.
And sometimes what's making me feel good at the moment is a trance state that's keeping you in a lower consciousness state. You know, the trance state of watching.
Right.
You can get into a trance state of just watching TV that has very little or no value to it at all. About what is it?
Right.
But you know, people make their choices, and it's different for everybody. But you know, I'm not here to. You know, there's a difference between being judgmental versus just having information that you can, you know, choose from. And I'm not here to attack individuals because some people are fine with it. But the vast majority of humanity doesn't understand that, and they're not aware of that. And so they just subject themselves to the information that is basically given to us by what we call these cabal controllers, how they dominate. They dominate the entertainment world. They dominate the information world. And they dominate the money world. And so we live our lives, the majority of humanity lives their lives under their pretenses of what they have power and control. And keeping
right.
us from who we really are and moving into what I can call this holonomic quantum, you know, holy world of moving into our state of holiness. That's what they keep us from doing. So
right.
you can be
and
in
so, yes,
of holiness and still veg out watching TV for a couple hours because it's just entertainment and you know it. Okay, and that's okay. But, yeah, as long as issues that you're aware of it. Yeah.
Right,
I'm
and
sorry.
So I think too. No, that's okay. I think what it is too. It doesn't come from judgment, although it may sound like that. But if, for example, when we're at the workshop and we're talking with the other participants in the workshop, none of us are talking about TV shows. Or football, Not that there's anything wrong with that, okay? And not to say that people don't watch that. We are talking about other topics. We're talking about what's going on in the workshop or what's going on in our lives or what are some of the miracles we've experienced or we just learned about XYZ. So that's more what's taking up space. So when you see a fellow human being perhaps not availing themselves to something that can actually help them break from the shackles of control, whether it's, via media or societal norms that are, rather limiting and artificial. It's more of a kind of invitation or more kind of, hey, there's another way to be. But interesting enough, and again, it's not judgmental, a lot of people prefer it. You can have a little bit of a conversation where you're kind of going a little bit beyond the programming and, they'll kind of pay attention to a little bit, but they will want to change the subject pretty quick. Yeah. So that's an interesting phenomenon.
Well, is there anything we want to discuss or are we ready to go to the callers?
Well, let's see. Let me see, because I was writing down some notes. And, because you have been talking for a long time about, working with separation consciousness, activating the heart consciousness, and you shared practices, et cetera. You talked about foundational knowledge and suggested some books. So obviously you're preparing the listeners for being prepared, being of a state to perhaps try to work with some of this. Is that my understanding? Is that why you're still honing in on that? And what's the relationship between that in terms of the preparation and then actually doing this process or being ready for it?
Well, I shared with the folks at the workshop in Sedona on Saturday, I said, if you want to learn this process, expect the fact that you're going to go back and take a college course. And I said, there's going to be homework. And I'm going to assign some homework to you to do. And I said, I'm not grading you, and I'm not doing a pass or fail. You're only grading yourself. There's only grading. You're the one grading yourself about how well you're doing this. And you're the one that's determining your own pass or fail situation. But I am going to require you to do some background work. And I said, if you want to learn this process, it's not just, let's just go do it. No, you got to do some work. And you're laying the foundation. And I gave you the reason why that when I shared, that Borden's paper, The Way of Learning. By doing the foundation work, you're establishing your ability to process information at the conscious level. Because what you're doing, you're bringing more information from the unconscious and subconscious minds up to help you do this at the conscious level. And by laying the foundation work, you're also in the process of undoing the blocks and the obstacles that are going to keep you from being able to do it. And that's the importance of all the foundation work, that is, or the foundation reading. You get to understand who Borden is. You get to understand who Neruda is. You understand what it means about ego and separation consciousness and why your body needs to be at a place of peace. And it's around all those things is what it is. And then when you've done all that, then you're ready to step in and read this. And when you read that, it makes sense to you. You're not struggling because, these are really bright scientists. And sometimes you got to read a paragraph and stop. And now what did I just read? I have to process this. So it sets the stage for you to process the information in the paper on MPO. That's what it does. So, yeah, if you want to learn this, there's a kind of like taking a college course. So.
Very good. That's good to establish that because I believe just knowing your listeners and people I've talked to that a lot of people have been doing some very good work and they're of the consciousness where they realize what's programming. They're sensitive to that. They're alert to the illusions, et cetera. And so now you're just sharing opportunities to step it up a little bit by reading X, Y, and Z, by doing such practice. And so that's pretty cool. That's the only thing I wanted to kind of clarify as you're inviting us to get ready.
You're learning basically a lifetime skill. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking 2 to 3 months to lay a foundation to learn a lifetime skill. And
right.
learning to do the lifetime skill in a holiness matter, I guess that's the way to say it. Doing it from
cool.
a place of holiness versus a place of survival consciousness. You're doing it from expansion versus survival. You're doing it from holiness versus what I would call, you know, self-greed. So.
Big difference, yes.
Okay. All right. Should we go to the callers?
I think so.
Okay. I'll go ahead and just take the first one, and then you can go ahead and, because now, folks, if you would like to call in, if you have any questions or if you have any comments, the call-in number is 515-605-9356. Again, that's 515-605-9356. And that gets you into the Blog Talk Radio on our switchboard here, and you touch one on your touchtone phone, and that raises a little flag to say, hey, yeah, you want to come on the air. So now normally Blanca will go in and she will basically, you know, do a little bit of screening on people up front. But what I do, I just take the first person and I go right to them, and I'm willing to do that. We're going to go right to this person. That was the first one on the list. He's from area code 918. You're here on the air with Dave. What can I do? What can I help you with tonight?
Actually, I did not have a question. I'm not sure why it registered that way.
You're always free to make any comments if you'd like to. So hope you're enjoying the program tonight. So,
well, absolutely. And thank you for doing them. And I'm listening intently, but I did not have a specific question. Thank you.
Okay. All righty. Well, great. Well, thanks a lot. So somehow you pressed one on your touchtone phone and came up. But great.
It is a new phone, and who knows what I did. So, okay.
Oh, you might have had one of those thumb dials accidentally.
So, must be.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot. Okay. Okay. Good night.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good night.
Okay. So Blanca is again, we're wide open, folks. You'll come up really quickly if in the next couple of ones if you want to have any questions or any make any comments. So, and we've had probably about 600 or 700 people that have either been on the Facebook Live or basically here on Blog Talk is what we've had the listener so far tonight. So I'm going to come right in. Blanca, I'm going to come right in and join you two. So whoever you have here tonight. So this is area code 617. And who are we with here tonight?
Max Potential.
Okay, Max, how are you?
Good.
Good.
You didn't hear any of the private stuff I was saying with Blanca over the air, did you?
I didn't hear any of that stuff. No.
Okay.
He's trying to set a date.
What's that? He's trying to set a date with you?
No. I'm just in a funny
email date.
He's got to get past Alan, doesn't he? That's right. I think that's the guy that he needs to ask first.
We're just kidding. Just kidding, Alan, if you're listening.
That's right. So. Sure. Well, Max,
Dave,
yeah, go ahead.
Just a little bit of current events as a tee up to my question. There's very recently a website went online called Report for the President. And it's basically a way for 119 plus people that have come together in a whistleblowing capacity that are involved in all the different three-letter agencies across the board. And the timing of it is such that there's a lot going down right now with, you know, the arrests that are, you know, potentially coming and the collusion conversation and all that, whatever. And it's creating quite a stir. Having said that, even listening to your show tonight, to some of the points you were making on the show, it occurred to me, you know, why is there any need to stay abreast of current events at all? Is it not possible to just completely go the other direction and do nothing but give my attention or give one's attention to Neruda, Course in Miracles, internal content, thinking the thoughts that I intend to think and really monitoring my internal state and, you know, things of that nature? What do you think about that?
Well, I would go back and say being in touch with the current events in the world is just a form of entertainment. and it has no real everyday value. And it's fine if you want to do that. That's okay. But it's the difference between looking at it as entertainment versus investing yourself into it, and you begin to believe it, and you're living it, and you're making it real, because in a holographic universe, it's not real. It's just an illusion. In the illusion, we still live in a world of form, and all the everyday events are a part of the world of form. But the world of form, its gift, is what comes up in front of our face and helps us work through the process of moving forward. If we look at the world of form for that reason, then it helps us make decisions. It helps us, lets us know what it is we have to undo. It lets us see, am I living my life from a place of holiness, or am I living my life from a place of being stuck in this Newtonian world, and I'm judging everybody, and I'm fighting and arguing in my mind with people, and I'm making judgments of the politics that's going on around me. The question is, what type of a life are you living? So there's nothing wrong with, you know, what I would say is being involved with it and looking at it if you want to. But what I do, and yes, I do that because, you know, that was my life for a number of years. I was in politics for a number of years. So I just look at it. It's my form of entertainment, and I don't make any judgment on it. That's how I do it. So, yeah. And it helps in discussions with other people is what it does. Because you can try so much just to isolate yourself from the world that you don't come across as what I call communicable to people around you. So, but
yep.
It's whatever
yep.
you want to do. Yeah. But I'm aware of that. I'm not aware of that site, but I have a gentleman that has attended my workshops, and he has a son that worked inside the FBI. And he has shared with me some of the stuff that his son has shared with him and said, there is so much more that is about ready to come out. There were a bunch of them that worked with him that basically went and signed the whistleblower agreement to protect themselves, and they're coming out with stuff that neither the Department of Justice or the FBI would touch, and they wouldn't bring it out. And so what these people have done, they gave the information to the FBI people. They gave it to the people who were doing the investigations. They wouldn't talk about it. They wouldn't report it. And it's pretty damaging material. So what they did, they signed the whistleblower agreement, and they gave it to Congress to bring mm-hmm. it out. And Congress is aware of it, and it's going to start coming out. And this is the stuff that's going to create some really serious problems for some people. It's really going to show the complete criminality that was behind some of this process that went on. And I think I'll let it be at that because I don't want to, you know, get ahead of them. But it's going to come out. That's what I'm being told. And this is the real world people. And I said this guy had a very, very high security clearance inside the FBI. And he just, you know, he's a believer in the process. And he was just so taken back by the deep corruption that was taking place at the top in his agency. And he basically has left the FBI, even because of the fact that it was no longer safe for him to stay there in that capacity.
Well,
he didn't want to be on the
you.
Hillary hit list. Let's put it that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah. But, yeah, it's nice to see there's a website, though, that's come out with that as well.
It didn't come out until Saturday morning, late in the wee hours of Friday. So it's brand new.
And,
yeah.
Okay. Right.
Report
okay,
for
well,
the president.org. So.
Yeah. Anything else you want to share with us, Max?
I did have one little question about what's the latest with M&M and the banking system. Is that like ready to go, and it's just the security issues are the main concern, or?
Well, if you wanted complete detail, you'd have to ask them directly. But I don't. I've allowed myself to move into a position that I am not going to presuppose what's going on with their lives and what's coming. So if you want that information, you need to ask them directly.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, there's nothing I can do to make it happen any faster. So, yeah. And so that's why I don't
yeah,
want
to. Yeah, it wasn't going there. My question was, is the banking system, like, ready to go? Is that something you would know? And the only holdup is the security issues that you made reference to at the beginning of the call.
Well, that's what I've said, and I think for my own safety, it's best that that's all that I say.
Okay, fine.
Okay. All right.
I'm good.
Okay. All right. Okay, thanks.
Adios.
Okay, I'm going to go to a lady by the name of Patricia from area code 317. Patricia, you're on the air. What can I help you with tonight?
Yes, I am. Hi, Dave. My question is that I keep hearing about some type of global reset that is going to happen. Do you know anything concerning that? And if so, how would that affect people? What would happen?
Well, I could talk about it for 10 hours. But the fact is, the vast majority of all the information that is out there on the blog site is just stories with nothing tangible to back it up. And what I have always said, if there is going to be a global currency reset, somebody somewhere has to come up with the hundreds of trillions of dollars to pay for that and make it happen. And so there is some talk about a global currency reset where it's just a little tiny little reset and it's not going to affect us in our everyday lives. But if you want to get the bigger picture, Patricia, I would encourage you to go back and start with, it was my August 5th currency update video that's on my YouTube page. It's about 15 to 20 minutes long, and you can start with that. And, you know, then from there you can go with any questions. But a global currency, what we look at, I talk about what's called the currency exchange, because there are some of these, what I call these dragon families out there that have wealth beyond our comprehension. And they are going to move money to go into humanitarian projects all around the world. And they're going to use everyday people like you and me to do that. But they're also going to fund some of these currencies that these people have to allow them to be moved into an area of what's called financial freedom for them, so they can do this work that I've talked about tonight. That's the bigger picture.
Okay, the one that I'm hearing about mostly, Dave, is that like our mortgages and things like that, there's a possibility that what you own, your home or your cars or what have you, that will also affect us in some type of reset.
Lots of stories, and those people can never tell you where the money is going to come from to do that.
Okay. So money will still have to come from somewhere to reset.
Absolutely.
And things like that.
If somebody's going to pay off your mortgage, who's going to come up with the $300,000 to do that? And I'm using that hypothetically, but you understand what I'm saying. You know,
yeah.
Who's got to come up with that money? So who has the money, and are they willing to do that? There are stories out there, and there's credible stories on both sides of that issue, but I cannot give you an exact answer at this time.
Okay. Well, I have one last question. Now, was it Iceland that got rid of their bankers and their mortgages were forgiven?
Yes, it was.
Was it Iceland?
And
okay,
we hear
so
about
how
the stories. Well, we hear about the stories of the things that they do in Iceland. And it's very, very difficult for us in the United States to do what Iceland does. Why? Because Iceland is a tiny, tiny little country that doesn't even have 500,000 people in the whole country. They don't even have 500,000 people in their country. So if you're a country of 500,000 people, it's really easy for you to do anything. I mean, you know, just the Phoenix metro area is 6 million people. The Los Angeles, Southern California metro area is 28 million people. Iceland isn't even 500,000. I mean,
okay.
You know, every state in our country has more people than Iceland other than Alaska and Wyoming, you know. So when you're very, very small in your own sovereign country, it's very easy for you to do stuff like that. So it's like it happening in a small town or a small city is what it is. So it's difficult to compare us to Iceland because of that.
Okay, I understand. All right, well, thank you so much, Dave, for answering my questions.
Okay.
You have a good night.
All right. Great, thanks. Have a good evening. Well, Blanca, I don't think we have anybody else. I don't see anybody else.
No, it does not look like there is anybody else. They're busy learning.
Good for them. That's right. Or working on the process. Right? They're going out and they're starting to take their college assignment homework into view and going out and downloading the books or buying the books.
Exactly. That's exactly what they're doing.
All righty. So Okay. Well, I don't have anything else then tonight. I mean, this is a program that's we're looking at about an hour and 25 minutes long, and that's, you know, that's about what it is. Well, when I like to, when I do these types of teaching programs, I like to kind of keep it around that, around the hour and a half.
Right.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to share with us tonight before we move on?
No, I don't think okay. so. I'm glad some folks called in, and it's always nice to hear what's on their minds. And you gave us a lot of food for thought and homework. So
yep.
hopefully mm-hmm. some people will take the challenge. And
yep.
So I think we're good.
I'm good. And I'm not certain if I'm going to be able to do a program next week. I won't know up until probably the day before, but I always send the newsletter out on Tuesday night about what's going to take place on Wednesday. And then the following week, I will be in Amsterdam. And I'm trying to remember if I can do the program. I'm trying to remember my schedule about when do I don't think I can do a program that week from Amsterdam because I think I'm flying on the plane during program time. I'll have to check my schedule.
Wow.
Whatever. I put it out in the newsletter. I always do the newsletter every week. So, okay. All right. Thanks, folks. Enjoyed. Glad you were here tonight. And we will see you next time I do the program. All right. Good night.